I'm Amber Klein, and this is Beyond the Nest, University of Minnesota Rochester's alumni podcast. In our final episode of Season 4, we look at UMR's trailblazing class of 2013, a group of pioneers who took a chance on a quirky startup campus located in a downtown mall. We'll hear how they stumbled across this newly minted U of M campus, the efforts to get them to U Square, and what they're up to now on the precipice of their first 10-year class reunion later this June. So, stay with us, won't you?
The University of Minnesota Rochester welcomed its first class of undergraduate students in August of 2009. The final lap of a tumultuous decade, 2009 was a year of change. On the world stage, the Great Recession wound down right as the H1N1 flu was declared a global pandemic. In the U.S., George W. Bush passed the baton to Barack H. Obama, and Sully Sullenberger miraculously landed his plane on the Hudson River. It was the year of Avatar and the subsequent but short-lived experiment to once again make 3D movies a thing. Slumdog Millionaire won Best Picture, the Steelers won the Super Bowl, and we all lost when Poker Face was played again and again and again. In Minnesota, the 2008 U.S. Senate race between Al Franken and Norm Coleman was finally concluded. It was the year the university opened Huntington Bank Stadium, then TCF Bank Stadium, and the Minnesota Vikings brought on former Jets quarterback Brett Favre. But in quiet old Rochester, on the third and fourth floor of the Galleria Mall, in what used to be a movie theater, UMR staff, faculty, and administrators eagerly awaited the arrival of the first class of Raptor undergraduates. True trailblazers. As Chancellor Emeritus Lehmkuhl and his motley crew of academics, innovators, and strategists laid the campus foundation and began constructing scaffolding around its unique approach to the delivery of higher education, those responsible for recruiting and coaching the first class of undergraduates discovered UMR. For Jen Hook, currently a senior student success coach, she first came upon UMR in 2008 through a job posting for an admissions rep role.
When I moved here, I got married to my spouse in the summer of 2008. We literally got married 2 weeks after we moved here. So we moved here, got married, like had our honeymoon, and then I was like, okay, like what am I gonna do now? So I started substitute teaching, which is a real interesting life. You don't know what the day is gonna bring. Mm-hmm. Get a phone call at 5:30, like, do you wanna sub for art at Willow Creek Middle School or whatever? And so I was doing that for a while. So I was job searching at the time and trying to figure out what I was going to do. And when I was in college, I had worked, I had given tours for our admissions office in college, and I had gotten pretty involved in that and had been like a student leader in the admissions office there. So, I was looking at kind of higher ed job, you know, positions, and this job had been posted for the admissions office at the University of Minnesota Rochester. Okay. And I knew nothing about the University of Minnesota Rochester except that, like, oh, the University of Minnesota,
wasn't much there.
No. And I had been actually applying for some jobs at RCTC at the same time. And so when I applied for this job, you know, I was trying to learn more about it, and there was like a website, and there was some information, but it was mostly housed under kind of what was happening at UCR at the time and what was happening at RCTC. Okay. And when I showed up for my sort of interview, they had just moved into this sort of space downtown, so that was in October of 2008.
Do you remember who interviewed you?
My interview was Jade Bakke, who was at the time kind of the admissions person on campus, and then Joe Marcassani was part of my admissions, and then Kendra Weber was part of was kind of running our student affairs at the time. And then I think Jenny Hegland was a part of my interview, if I'm remembering.
That is a name I have not heard.
Oh, Jenny.
I've heard all the others, but I haven't heard that one.
I can't remember for sure. I'm pretty sure Jenny was maybe a part of that.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm literally like having flashbacks now, giving my presentation. Mm-hmm. All of my pictures didn't show up on my PowerPoint. you make your presentation, yeah. They all were red X's on my PowerPoint. So I was giving my presentation, like, just imagine there's a picture of this. And I'm picturing people's faces. I'll have to ask Molly. She'll remember who was.
Did everybody have to do a presentation for their job at this point? Because not everybody now does do a presentation for their job.
I'm not sure. I'm pretty sure in admissions they want to see if you can, like, get up and talk to people.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
That's important.
And what was your impression of UMR? Like, on the day of your interview?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, it's startling to show up to a job interview in a mall. And I guess that was part of my, like, not like lack of preparation, but a little bit. Like, you show up and you're like, okay, no, literally, it's a mall, right? And I'm in this mall, and you show up on the second floor and their third floor, and they're like, okay, like, this is the campus. But really, at that point, we didn't have much furniture, right? Like, they were still building out classrooms. They had a lot of vision for what it would be, but so far it was just the partner programs that were on campus. And so their spaces were built out, but none of the Learn Labs or any of the kind of spaces we think of now for our health sciences students existed. I remember Jade giving me the tour and kind of like walking around, and I was like, okay. I was also like pretty desperate for a job at that point. And so I was like, this is great. Wonderful. I can roll with this. Like, cool. I'll come to work in a mall. That's fine. It turned out pretty great for me. Here I am in 2023. 15 years later.
For Perry Thielander, UMR's very first student success coach, it was the use of the word coach, which piqued his interest in a quirky little school located in a mall.
Good institution. My older brother will vouch, say it's one of the best places he's ever worked, because he worked at Twin Cities and then became financial aid director at Crookston for a bit of time. And I was like, Rochester, wow, there's a campus down there. And the student success coach position, well, I've never seen a position like that. Mm-hmm. And I looked, and you see a lot of just academic advisor, career, and nothing of coach. I never saw a position that said coach in their title.
Like Jen Hook, Molly Olson, UMR's Director of Marketing and Communications, got her start on campus in the admissions office, grinding out college fairs and following up on student leads.
You know, the actual environment was so unique and different. And I think the other thing is that it was a very young, all of the colleagues that I would be working with were newer in their careers too. So it was interesting to figure out like how that was going to look. But also there was like, everything was a department of one. We still have a lot of departments of ones, but everything was. And so that was always interesting to kind of factor in. The campus itself was like two floors and that's it. And absolutely no graduate, there were only graduate classes on at that time. And they were all through Twin Cities or Duluth. Mm-hmm. So it was like, I never saw any of the students on my tour anyways, because they're all weekend students. So that was interesting. But I think it was really interesting and eye-opening for me to really understand, like, I would be recruiting for a class that didn't yet exist, mm-hmm. for a program that didn't yet exist.
As for students, like UMR alumna and class of 2013 graduate Ellie Ryan, a licensed chiropractor working in Illinois, discovering UMR was a pleasant surprise, but came with a few questions like, was this actually a school?
Originally, I thought, well, I guess I could go to the Twin Cities and do some kind of commute or whatever. We could live halfway. But then I actually found that there was a school in Rochester, and it was confusing at first. Like, I showed some of my guidance counselors and whatnot, and they were like, I don't know if this is an actual school. Like, they were, it was very, kind of up in the air. Nobody really knew what UMR was and if it was an actual school. My mom and I, we pulled up and we saw that it was a mall. So that was interesting. And we kind of walked in and, we found the admissions office and chatted, and It was very unique. It was not a normal college, you know, tour per se. They showed us around. I want to say it was probably a Friday. There were very little people on campus. There was, you know, really no students. It was very empty.
Yeah.
So it was unique, but obviously, you know, it didn't deter me away because I ended up going there. So. Yeah.
And for Evan Doyle, another graduate from the class of 2013, who currently works on strategy and policy for the Global Fund, a Geneva-based organization tasked with fighting AIDS, tuberculosis, and malaria, it was UMR's unique approach to academics which captured his attention.
When I heard about the UMR program and how integrated and unique the curriculum was and how focused it was on health sciences and pre-med coursework, that really attracted me to the program. When I visited the campus, the professors that were there were all very eager for me to be there, which was a very unique experience as well. Like when I was visiting other campuses, it was very clear that I was a bit of a number. And so I was really attracted by the opportunity because I saw something new, saw an opportunity to stand out. It, you know, flash forward 4 years from then when I knew that I thought I would want to apply to medical school. I saw the value in that new program when I was visiting. And so the integrated curriculum in particular, the way that it was sold to me and the way my experience at UMR was, we had the curriculum was really integrated. It was that we would be studying one topic in one course and that topic would come up in another course and they were tangentially related on paper, but then it really made a lot of sense.
And to actually get students to University Square in the first place, folks like Jen Hook really had to get quite creative as they were working with a shoestring budget, didn't have an alumni base to tap into, and the curriculum itself wasn't yet in its final form.
I mean, I think it was just being approved by the Board of Regents. It was like not even fully approved yet. We did not have an application. We didn't have an online application like the entire first year. We literally only had a paper application. So we would go to high schools with this like, first we'd go to high schools without anything. We had some printed materials. So we would go with this kind of like printed materials that we had and we would describe what we thought this degree program would be with our sort of like, you know, innovative, and it would be health focused and everything would be related to health. And so we had these kind of like ideas around what it would be and what the chancellor had kind of described in his vision to us and what the faculty, these early faculty that were literally just being brought on board right around the same time that we are, were beginning to sort of think about. So we would go to these high schools and students would be like, well, that's pretty interesting. And we'd be like, great. Okay, write your name down. And then I'm going to tell you when there's an application available because there's not one available yet. I know that you're a senior in high school and it's January. And also, you know, most colleges have already like accepted people, but we haven't even gotten our application yet for 5 months from now.
So funny.
So yeah, I mean, it was just wild when you think back now to like what people's, you know, the cycles of when you start recruiting people and just, and Jade had done a little bit of that ahead of time, but like it is just kind of nuts to think about.
For Molly Olson, recruiting the first class meant hitting the pavement and making the rounds at college fairs, any way to get in front of those who hadn't yet committed to class starting in fall 2009. So how do you recruit for a program that doesn't yet exist?
Yeah.
What was your process? How did you find students? Did you have a lead list? Did you just show up on high school doorsteps?
Yeah, we did a little of everything. So, our team was quite small. It was like an app processor, Sarah Hovden, and then the director of admissions, Jade, and myself, and then Jen Hook was also hired the same day I was and started the same day that we both started on the same day, which was fun.
As a student success coach?
As an admissions rep.
Oh, she started as an admissions rep.
Yep.
Okay.
So her and I were the first initial admissions reps. I actually started the job on crutches because I broke my ankle that Halloween. So I was supposed to be out on the road traveling, which I did somehow. But really, truly, ours was completely a boots on the ground guerrilla marketing kind of campaign. We really kind of just were able to purchase some listservs here and there. Mind you, we're also really late into their senior year. So most recruitment would happen in their junior year. We're already almost to December by the time, you know, we were getting rolling. And we traveled like crazy. We went to all these high school visits. I remember going to Lake City High School and I was walking around in my crutches with a backpack and all of my travel gear. And they're like, what sports injury did you have? Like, who are you playing? Like, you know, because we were young and like we looked like we could be high school students too. So Jen and I would always get those comments on campus visits, like, what year are you? And it was always funny. It was a lot of really building personal relationships. That first class of 56 students, I knew every one of them. I knew their name. I knew most of their hometowns. Like, we really worked to get to know them because we believed in the program, but we also believed in the students that we were admitting to. And it was hard because we didn't have a baseline. We were like, we think this student would be successful. Like, let's have some more conversations to see where their motivation is. And there were some students, you know, that were super nervous to come, and so many students that were just really pumped and excited. And they're like, it would be interesting to see how many of those are the first in their family, because there's, I feel like, very much so some correlation there to like birth order and like risk taking, but also that they're leaders and just amazing, amazing students. Chancellor Lumkla would always say, I'm building the plane as we're driving it. And it's always like, oh, dear God, that's a little terrifying. But I appreciate that, too. Like, we weren't ever afraid to take risks. It was rare that I would throw an idea out and people would say no. And so, and that, I think, has still continued. Like, I feel like Chancellor Carroll really still believes in innovation and, like, trying new things. And change is okay. It's inevitable. But then also, like, it's okay to fail on things and try again or pick up the pieces and figure out how we're going to move forward. So the leadership is very different, I would say, but the goal and mission is still on par.
Once on campus and settled in, the class of 2013 went about defining what the UMR student experience would begin to look like. For Ellie Ryan, that meant dabbling in a few different areas before focusing on a pathway to becoming a chiropractor.
Pretty quickly within the first year, I decided on PA school. So that's what I had for most of my time there, that I wanted to go to PA school. And I think it was probably junior year, I applied to PA school, didn't get in right away. And so then I thought, well, I guess I'll work for a year, get some more patient care experience, and, you know, apply again the next year, which is pretty typical for people. And for some reason, I just started looking at other options. You know, I just started to think, well, is there anything else I can do? Because I'm kind of a school person. Like, I didn't know how I would do with a gap in between of a couple of years or a year, however long it would take. And so I kind of wanted to just continue going to school. I was already in that groove. So I was looking at other options and I stumbled upon chiropractic school. I was seeing a chiropractor at the time and kind of talked to her a little bit. And then I found the school that I went to, National University of Health Sciences, which is in the Chicago suburbs, and talked to them and I applied and I got in like right away. And so then I was like, okay, I guess this is what I'm doing. So it was kind of a random decision that obviously led me down a great path and I wouldn't change it for anything, but there wasn't anything, you know, specific that necessarily led me to that. So the first 2 years, like you said, basically everyone takes the same courses. And then year three and four, there were kind of two paths. So one path, well, I guess I should say three. One path was more if you're going into patient care. So you took more, you know, you took like anatomy two and you took certain classes that were going to be geared towards, you know, medical school and PA school and those types of programs. And then there was another path for if you weren't going to be in direct patient care, like healthcare administration and those types of classes. And then there was also people who were going into the BHSP program. So there were kind of three tracks. And so my track, I mean, I definitely knew I wanted patient care. So I followed that path and took those classes for my third year. And then year four, you do some classes and then a capstone. my capstone, I did a good handful of classes, and then I also worked with the doctor that took us to Honduras. I worked with him and doing some like different data collection and stuff on like patient care and wait times and different things like that. So doing some observation and putting together some data and kind of helping. I think it was a project he was kind of doing and then I was helping with it. So that was part of my capstone that I did.
For Evan Doyle, the UMR experience was one of opportunity and a chance to create something new.
It was kind of a risky decision. I think as an 18-year-old, you don't think of risk in the same way. And so for me, I saw those risks as more opportunities. Challenges didn't seem like big barriers. A formal path hadn't been carved yet, so there weren't very many barriers in my way for doing whatever I wanted, and more opportunity to push boundaries too. So when I enrolled, there weren't any clubs, there weren't any organizations yet. So, and I was always very into politics and governance, and I was in student government when I was in high school. So one of the big things that I pursued when I joined UMR was to start a student government. So we started with a student activities committee. I think that was the first thing. Basically, we started that committee just to spend this student activities budget taken out of our tuition. So we started there. Then the university system said you need to have a student senator. So then I moved over to being our student senator. Then the director of student activities, I think was his title at the time, said, you know, you have all these kind of random governance structures that are cropping up, so you should probably have one formalized student government. So I got a bunch of friends together. We drafted a constitution and some bylaws, and we created a student government. That's now, which I'm very happy to see on the website, is still going. That's the Rochester Student Association. So then I served as the first president.
On the other side of the student experience wall, Perry Thielander was able to look at a student's time at UMR holistically and provide advisement, mentorship, and coaching as they, the student, discovered where their passions would ultimately lead.
One is the relationships that you have with other, with one, the student, and the amount of number of students you can actually sit down and coach. To have that time to talk through all the facets that encompass their academic, personal, whatever, their entire life, really, is what they're going through. An academic advisor may not have that capacity to do all of that. They may have the skill set, but they're really focusing on the academic planning, and they can do the referral sources and be that referral to many different pieces. But to coach, you're it. You're the one navigating through the career, the life, the pre-health, the academic, and then working so closely with the faculty. I think in that atmosphere, when I was a high school teacher, the coaches were the ones reaching out to all of the teachers and making sure their players were ready to, could they play that game?
Yeah.
Are they late for class? Are they doing this? And really, it's those relationships that had to be paramount for us to do coaching and for us to have the space and the time to spend with the student to have those really more deeper critical conversations that is not really afforded to an academic advisor because of mainly the caseload that they have to work with. I don't know if we can actually do the more critical conversations and have that time with students to do that more coaching and work with those same students from start to finish also, I think, represents coaching. Whereas an advisor could maybe only have them for a year or 2 years and they move on to another advisor and another advisor. I think with coaching, they have to have that same point of contact as best they can throughout their entire time here.
And for Jen Hook, what makes UMR such an attractive experience is its health science focus and proximity to Mayo Clinic.
You know, I think obviously we had two things going for us. One is the University of Minnesota, and the other is Mayo Clinic. And so the combination of those two things, I do think, is what got some students like, oh, those two things are kind of enough for us to, like, bite and come learn more. And We had some students, boy, so many interesting memories, right? We had a student who, right, was driving by and he was like, oh, I think I got admitted here. He did the Share My App program through the Twin Cities. So he and his dad like stopped. And he did. He became part of our very first class of students. They were like driving by and they stopped. And I just think about those students who made that choice to come here. They are such an incredible, and some students, I think, you know, we did lose some students in that first class because like, whoa, this was not it for them, right? Like they maybe made that decision not fully informed, or maybe it was just not what they thought it was going to be, or it was just too different.
Yeah.
But there was also, when I think about that first class of students, like what a determined and just like gutsy group of students, right? Like those were students who truly, you look at what they're doing now and they're like making a real difference in this world, right? Mm-hmm. Because they are students who are willing to come to this place that was totally unformed and to form it, right? Yeah. Like their input, their lived experience really did create this place.
Coming up, where the class of 2013 is today and what they're doing 10 years post-UMR. But before that, join University of Minnesota Rochester on the evening of Saturday, June 17th for a celebration of our trailblazing class of 2013, featuring special guests Chancellor Emeritus Stephen Lemkuhl, former Governor of Minnesota Tim Pawlenty, former U of M President Bob Brunix, and 2013 UMR alumnus Evan Doyle. The U of M Marching Band will kick off the event promptly at 5 p.m. from Peace Plaza, located in downtown Rochester. We hope to see you there.
And finally, the culmination of decades of community-led work, advocacy, negotiation, and even a little bit of arm twisting. University of Minnesota Rochester's class of 2013. Against the backdrop of the Great Recession, this group of 57 trailblazers arrived at University Square and promptly proceeded through a novel and innovative academic experience, one built by forward-thinking faculty, staff, and administrators who aimed to create a new paradigm in the delivery of higher education. They came to UMR with a desire to make a difference through careers in health, science, and medicine. As students, they put to the test many of the ideas churning out of the Center for Learning Innovation, confirmed the Student Success Coach model, and charted pathways into Mayo Clinic that still exists to this day and offer current UMR students a diverse set of hands-on experiences along their journey to a health sciences degree. This group of pioneers laid the groundwork for the Rochester Student Association, UMR Student Government, and set up various student clubs and helped rejuvenate downtown Rochester. As alumni, they have gone near and far. Many have earned graduate and professional degrees, attending schools across the U.S. and even a few abroad. Professionally, there are physicians, professors, policy advisors, housing advocates, chiropractors, epidemiologists, and health information management specialists, just to name a few. Some work for Minnesota's most important healthcare systems and providers, including Mayo Clinic, Olmsted Medical Center, and CentraCare. Others have gone into academia at places such as Arizona State University and University of Iowa Healthcare. A few have gone to work abroad through the Peace Corps and the Global Fund to fight AIDS. And a few more have nestled into unique careers on the business end of healthcare with organizations like Abbott, Be the Match, and Sanford Health. These 57 trailblazers took a flyer on a startup campus located in a mall, and in doing so, transformed the city of Rochester, the University of Minnesota, and higher education itself.
Thank you for listening to Beyond the Nest, UMR's alumni podcast. Across this season, we have heard from many of the voices and personalities who helped shape the University of Minnesota Rochester. For staff and faculty, their intuition, ingenuity, and innovative mindset battled ghosts, charted new paradigms, and reimagined higher education. For students, now Raptor alumni, they took a chance and persevered in a wholly unique environment, offering an entirely new way to approach the college experience. The formation of UMR as the newest campus of the University of Minnesota system took decades of dedicated work by countless champions aiming to bolster the city of Rochester and provide students from across the state the opportunity to solve the grand health challenges of the 21st century. Beyond the Nest is produced by UMR Alumni Relations, written and narrated by Marco Lanz, and edited by Dante Fumo. Until next time, I'm Amber Klein.
There are a great many thanks to those who lent their stories, perspectives, and lived experiences to this season of Beyond the Nest and to the growth of the University of Minnesota Rochester. A special thanks to those who took time out of their busy lives to mosey on down memory lane, including former Minnesota Governor Tim Pawlenty, Rochester Mayor Kim Norton, State Senator Carla Nelson, Rochester Higher Education Development Committee members Marilyn Stewart and Drew Flotta, Grouk advocates Ali Good, Jim Clausen, John Wade, and Valerie Halverson Pace, UMR retirees Gail Sauter, Jay Hesley, Joe Marcassani, Dr. Claudia Neuhauser, and Chancellor Emeritus Stephen Lemkuhl, current UMR staff Ginny Wright Peterson, Jen Hook, Molly Olson, Perry Thielander, and Chancellor Lori Carroll, and of course, to UMR alumni Ellie Ryan, Madeline Hammerland, and Evan Doyle. From voice to action, your experiences have shaped UMR's early history, and for that, our campus is eternally grateful. Lock the gates.